John, I can't hear you if you're talking.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is October 28, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you are listening over Rumble or YouTube or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on a weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find your banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading. We're going to start this week in the Gospel of John. We'll be reading the first chapter, read by Alexander Scorby. Gospel of John, read by Alexander Scorby.
The Gospel according to St. John, Chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. The same came for a witness to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh, and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bare witness of him, and cried, saying, This was he of whom I spake, he that cometh after me is preferred before me, for he was before me. And of his fullness have all we received, and grace for grace. For the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. No man hath seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him. And this is the record of John, when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, Who art thou? And he confessed and denied not, but confessed, I am not the Christ. And they asked him, What then? Art thou Elias? And he saith, I am not. Art thou that prophet? And he answered, No. Then said they unto him, Who art thou? That we may give an answer to them that sent us. What sayest thou of thyself? He said, I am the voice of one crying in the wilderness, Make straight the way of the Lord, as said the prophet Esaias. And they which were sent were of the Pharisees. And they asked him, and said unto him, Why baptizest thou then, if thou be not that Christ, nor Elias, neither that prophet? John answered them, saying, I baptize with water, but there standeth one among you, whom ye know not. He it is, who coming after me is preferred before me, whose shoes latchet I am not worthy to unloose. These things were done in Bethabara beyond Jordan, where John was baptizing. The next day John seeth Jesus coming unto him, and saith, Behold the Lamb of God, which taketh away the sin of the world. This is he, of whom I said, After me cometh a man which is preferred before me, for he was before me. And I knew him not, but that he should be made manifest to Israel. Therefore am I come baptizing with water. And John bare record, saying, I saw the Spirit descending from heaven like a dove, and it abode upon him. And I knew him not, but he that sent me to baptize with water, the same said unto me, Upon whom thou shalt see the Spirit descending and remaining on him, the same is he which baptizeth with the Holy Ghost. And I saw and bear record that this is the Son of God. Again the next day after, John stood, and two of his disciples, and looking upon Jesus as he walked, he saith, Behold the Lamb of God. And the two disciples heard him speak, and they followed Jesus. Then Jesus turned, and saw them following, and saith unto them, What seek ye? They said unto him, Rabbi, which is to say, being interpreted, Master, where dwellest thou? He saith unto them, Come and see. They came and saw where he dwelt, and abode with him that day, for it was about the 10th hour. One of the two which heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He first findeth his own brother Simon, and saith unto him, We have found the Messias, which is, being interpreted, the Christ. And he brought him to Jesus. And when Jesus beheld him, he said, Thou art Simon, the son of Jonah. Thou shalt be called Cephas, which is by interpretation a stone. The day following, Jesus would go forth into Galilee, and findeth Philip, and saith unto him, Follow me. Now Philip was of Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip findeth Nathanael, and saith unto him, We have found him of whom Moses in the law and the prophets did write, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. And Nathanael said unto him, Can there any good thing come out of Nazareth? Philip saith unto him, Come and see. Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him, and saith of him, Behold an Israelite indeed in whom is no guile. Nathanael saith unto him, Whence knowest thou me? Jesus answered and said unto him, Before that Philip called thee, when thou wast under the fig tree, I saw thee. Nathanael answered and saith unto him, Rabbi, thou art the Son of God, thou art the King of Israel. Jesus answered and said unto him, Because I said unto thee, I saw thee under the fig tree, believest thou? Thou shalt see greater things than these. And he saith unto him, Verily, verily, I say unto you, hereafter ye shall see heaven open, and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions tonight?
Yes, and I would also like to remind people that the Red Pill Expo, which is on November 16th and 17th, has now been converted to a completely free live stream event. The expo's topic is The Chasm, Collectivism versus Individualism. And if you'd like to sign up for free to listen to it, go to the redpilluniversity.org/expo-registration/ to sign up, or just delete the expo registration if you want to see the list of speakers and their topics. They have some really great speakers lined up. The first question is...
Well, before we get started, I just want to make the note that if anybody wants to get into the queue is open, *6 and 1 if you're on a phone. And should be, if you're on an app or a browser, there should be a button to push. Can you give us that website again on Red Pill University, I think you said?
Yes. Hold on a sec. I'll pull it back up. It's Red, R-E-D, Pill, P-I-L-L, university.org/. To get on the website to see the topics and speakers and so on. And there is also a button you can click there for expo registration, which will sign you up for the free live stream access for the whole 2 days. There is a third day, which you can sign up for if you want, but that one will have some minor cost associated with it. You get 2 days free, which is an outstanding bargain, hard to beat. Okay.
So they're having, this is mostly a live stream on the internet. Are they going to still have a group gathering somewhere or no?
No, that was the issue. People didn't want to travel. Even the speakers and the people that were thinking of signing up didn't want to be traveling, being committed with expenses of traveling and so on during that time frame, so close to the election. And so they decided what they would do is just convert it to a totally fictional venue. There will be no physical venue anywhere for it, and it'll all be live streamed.
Okay, and what date and what time did you say what that was?
Let me go back again.
I think you said it was 2 days. It was a two-day event, right?
Yes, it is. There is a third day, but that one is costs a certain amount of money. I don't remember what it is. It's for November 16th and 17th. I believe that's a Friday, Saturday. And Sunday is probably the extra day. But the 16th and 17th are totally free. All you have to do is sign up.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, the first question is a little bit long. It says, my son was arrested by the state. After being held for 2 months, the federal government came in with an indictment. When giving the information they used for evidence, the prosecutor asked for it to be under protection. Long story, but when he finally viewed the documents, the officer had watched someone moving known stolen merchandise to the house. Then they pulled him over and questioned him about a black backpack. Immediately they requested a warrant and searched the house. My son was arrested and put on the car. They say they found a lot of stolen guns and the black backpack. His defense attorney will not bring this up to the court, and they want him to plead. When he won't, they added a superseding indictment, adding more guns. How can he get this document brought forward? Why can the prosecutor leave out critical information to get the indictment?
Well, again, you know, we are dealing with a totally corrupt court system. We hear a lot of horror stories, and it's just, they do whatever they want to do. I mean, we've been in the courts for quite some time. They make things up. They change the law. They don't even follow their own law. They make up own rules, and it's just one thing to another. So I don't know what has caused that kind of a situation. It sounds like he might have had a problem, that he might have been guilty of something, but maybe not, again. But as far as trying to get justice in these courts, it's pretty difficult. As a matter of fact, really any court that's really going on that's a criminal court is not a court of record. Criminal courts are not part of common law. And if they're applying civil law in those courts, which all courts are, then it's a chancery court. And a chancery court is forbidden, really, here in the United States, because we only have two jurisdictions, and that, of course, is law, the law being common law, and equity, equity being, of course, statutes and codes and so on that is applied against anyone that is operating in criminal, operating in commercial activities or working for a government agency. So, but again, I don't have enough information to really make too much of a comment on it, but it is a problem, and hopefully it's going to be solved soon. You know, we have written a paper. It's a very powerful paper, in my opinion. It's on our front page. It's called The Presentment with an Audit to the United States Supreme Court. It was filed and served on October 11, 2024 by the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And it's a lengthy paper. It should be helpful to a lot of people who are entering into the courts. It'll help them to understand the problems in the courts. It lists 21 or 22 situations or problems that really need to be addressed by the United States Supreme Court in order to bring back our courts of justice. And that of course, has been the focus of what the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury was came together for that purpose, is to bring courts of record back. And, you know, we have, I do believe that we have a very good chance of that happening quite quickly by the beginning of next year, as soon as Trump takes office. But we have copied quite a few people on this paper, and you can read of all the individuals that we have copied on this paper in the first couple of pages. And we'll see where things go. But look, at America will never, ever, ever be great again until or unless we get our courts of record back, because without our courts of record, there is no justice. and the nation will be as just and as righteous as our court system is. But I don't have too much to say on the specifics on that particular case, and don't have enough information to really give any advice or thoughts. Next question, I guess.
Okay. I want to move forward with executing a COS charter. Under objectives, I would like clarification about what I read from three objectives about safety from natural disasters, displaced people, and general safety of all the people in the county versus jury administration. Each of those four objectives is a huge responsibility. Many emergency services exist, whether through religious organizations, other nonprofits, or various agencies. Ought the sole objective be to return the courts from Roman law or Roman civil law to common law justice? That alone will be a costly endeavor.
Well, I'm not too sure exactly that I understand. They mentioned a U.S. charter, and after you completed reading that, it sounded like they were talking about the charter that we put together for the committees of safety. So that's what is that what you get out of this, that they're talking about the charter for the committees of safety? Because right. We discuss different things in that. We've created some instructional videos, the first video, you can find these videos under Starter Committee of Safety. And, if you follow the breadcrumb trail, you'll eventually end up into this page. But you can jump straight through it by going to Handbooks, Videos, and Tools. And I'll just read this paragraph here. It says, the following series of videos will teach succinctly how to introduce, create, and run a committee of safety. These videos, or PowerPoints, because we've got both for download, should be played as you organize your committee of safety. Should print out copies of the charter and resolutions to hand out to all committee members. And after playing the videos, discuss additional information you might want to add. You will find that as time goes on, you will add addendums to the charter and resolutions. These videos, PowerPoints, and many other videos, PDFs, MS Words, and many more tools are available below the videos for download. After forming your committee of safety, some members will join after you have played some or all of these instructional videos. You can send your new members to nationallibertyalliance.org/handbooks to catch up and be informed on the committee of safety plan, structure, and duties for each subcommittee. So anyway, the first one is the presentment, is presenting to the people the government by consent. Of course, we have also another video that can also do that. We have these in PowerPoints, and the other one is more in-depth and would be more like a 3 or 4 hour event that you might put together. You can find that also on our front page. But you could do this with a hour-long video just for the introduction. And then the forming of the committees of safety, which is really what this individual is asking about, is the committee of safety charter. So we put together a charter, and then of course we also have put together some basic resolutions, and this is all instructed in the videos, and the download of the PDFs are right underneath this. Also, we put together first order of business is to meet with your sheriff, the plan to meet with your sheriff, to bring him on board and to explain to that individual what it is that you're doing. And after reading all the literature and all of the things that we suggest that should be given to the sheriff, and he should be given at least 4 to 6 weeks to kind of peruse through that information before you meet with him again, you're going to want to make an appointment with him sometime down the road. 4 to 6 weeks after your first meeting. But the charter here, which we do get into the details, let's see, they're talking about, generally speaking, I believe it's in the charter, where under certain emergencies, there are emergency systems set up. But the key thing is the people should be prepared for emergencies. And it's up to the Committee of Safety. It always has been, although they haven't been around because they've been kind of covered up and exploited through the committee man process, which is politically run, politically controlled, offering to you the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. But the committees of safety, their purpose was to maintain safety within their communities in order to also have government by consent and to control your government, to work with the powers of the sheriff's office and work out a plan on what the people can do at a time of disaster, which I think is what this individual was talking about. And that's the plan we do lay out here. There's more to be added to this. This is just the framework of the charter, and we also give a framework of the resolutions. We've also structured the committees of safety in such a fashion, as our founding fathers did, with the specific subcommittees that are necessities, one of them being, of course, the judicial committee, another being the political committee of correspondence, the educational committee, and the militia committee, and many other committees as seen fit or needed by and realized by the Committee of Safety. But again, in that process, we need to be prepared. If you read through history, Benjamin Franklin was very highly involved in this kind of thing, especially pulling together the militia and forming the militia and training the people, the local people, for the purpose of really defending the colonies. And we too need to defend our states. Matter of fact, in the New York State Constitution, it is very clear that it is the duty of every individual to respond to any emergency called in order to protect the borders of the state of New York should, some kind of a situation come up. And that's actually in our Constitution here in New York. I'm sure other states have the same thing. But with or without something like that, it is the duty of the people to prepare and take control of any kind of emergencies. Now, we do have emergency services on the local level, of course. We have the fire department, we have the rescue, we have the police, and we have, of course, the sheriff's office, which really is the key to the whole process of an emergency and running an emergency. And then, of course, you have federal organizations that supply also assistance different things that's necessary to truck in food and maybe generators and different things depending on the type of emergency. But the local government should never, ever, ever give up control of the local government, of the local, what they need to provide for locally. To federal agencies. The federal agencies come in only to assist, and we should be prepared. But that requires the people to be prepared also. And that, of course, is the duty of the Committee of Safety. And we've written that kind of information into this charter. And I think we also fortified it with some things also in the resolutions. But again, it is also meant to be added to. But we also need, and we put this together in such a way so that every committee of safety across America is structured in the same fashion, because it's important. You can't take control of the political process if you just isolate yourself to your own county. You have to work county to county because, take for instance your congressman. If you're going to go elect a congressman and put someone into that political position, that isn't your congressman that you would vote for, is also controlling in other counties within your state. So it goes in between different counties and also other people that need to be elected. We gave a lot of information on this kind of a thing. Let me see if we got it up here yet. We may not even have it up here yet. We do, the political committee. If you listen to this particular video here, it's a PowerPoint video. We do provide the PowerPoint also down and below this these videos. But if you listen to this, you can get a pretty good idea on the political, the filling of political vacancies, because again, it does interchange with other counties. So you have to work together. Also, you have to come together at a state level, just like the committeeman. Anybody who has been a committeeman with the political process, that is the statutory committeeman, they've laid things out where they come together in January, which we should be doing the same thing. up in the usually should be done in the you know, for instance, for us, it would be the capital would be Albany, so we would do it up in Albany. But it should be in the capital within the state, where all of the people send at least one representative from every county committee of safety for the sole purpose of coming together to discuss and plan for the elections, which is later in the year, of course. And there are elections. You know, this meeting only takes place on the even years when there is some federal elections taking place. The odd years pretty much are for local elections. And committeemen come together on the states on the even years in order to discuss the plan for the primaries and the different things that affect many counties or the entire state. For instance, if you're voting someone in for governor, or, of course, if you're voting a federal for your federal senators, which should be really provided by the legislators of each state, which was meant by our founding fathers. The 17th Amendment, which is repugnant to the Constitution, it destroyed the power, the balance of power of the Constitution. So we have to give that back, and I should hope that that's going to happen next year. The 16th Amendment and the 17th Amendment should be null and void. The original 13th Amendment needs to be reinstated, and the existing 13th Amendment should be put together with the 14th Amendment, which it originally was, because the 14th Amendment is actually the 13th and the 14th Amendment that came together. But sometime in a period, short period of time, in the, before 1871, I believe, but sometime in the late 1800s, the 13th Amendment was removed, and the 14th Amendment was broken into two amendments, 13 and 14. And we need to reinstate all this. And we did put a lot of this information in our paperwork going to the federal courts for that we presented to the United States Supreme Court. And again, we copied a lot of people on this, some really good people that are senators and also our representatives, and of course Trump and many other individuals that are participating in his administration to try to educate them and to bring to their attention these issues. And we should expect that they're going to support these issues because there really is no choice. If we're going to go back to the Constitution, then we got to go back to the Constitution. I guess next question. And if anybody wants to get into the queue, again, the queue is open, star 601 if you're on a phone, and should be a button if you're on an app or a browser. Jan?
Okay, the next question refers to a website for a group, and they're called the Sovereignty Education and Defense Ministry Group, SEDM. If you go to their website, they have...
What is that, SDEM.org or .com or something? What's the website again?
Yeah, it's SEDM.org is the website.
SEDM.org, okay.
And if you go there, you find that the first page has what they call hot issues, and there's 18 of them. Some of them are like the laws of property, common law and equity litigation, right to travel, dealing with police, identification and identity theft, tax withholding and reporting, lessons learned from mistakes of others, information for pastors, dealing with corrupt governors, fake de facto government, and so on. This is a religious group. There's about 14,000 members in it. And this person is wondering what we think of that group.
Well, I've never looked into them. It looks a little interesting. We should take a look. Maybe the leadership here at NLA and I myself could also take a look at this and see once what we might think. Maybe make some contact with them, have a conversation. And maybe we can work together. So it's something we'll have to look into.
Okay. The next questions are about the presentment that was filed to the Supreme Court and comments that people have been sending in on it. The enforcement on page III leads one to believe that the listed military generals will act to enforce this presentment. And the question first is, how is this possible while Biden is present? If Harris wins, forget it. Number one, the military in our society follows direction from the executive branch, and it follows legislation by Congress. I know the system as designed is broken. Two, the courts represented by these military jurists only issue decisions. Someone else has to do the enforcing. Putting this another way, to put enforcement in the hands of the military takes us into the realm of banana and African republics, tricky at best. I wonder what our founding fathers would say. After all, Washington was a general, as was Eisenhower, but neither wore their epaulets in civilian office.
Well, again, you know, I understand what the person is talking about, but there's plenty of information out there and knowledge of what's going on. I don't know if they're familiar with devolution. Devolution is in play. And if devolution is not in play, and Trump were to lose the election, the republic is over. We're done. It would be civil war, and it would probably go on for quite some time. Without the military, I don't believe there is a way to save this nation. I do know that the military has been aware of the problem going back to the days of Kennedy. Kennedy put up an alert with the special services, the special forces, which really was to prepare for the potential problems that he already foresaw, and they took him out. And I think they've been really itching for quite some time to do something. We've heard conversations by a lot of people, or some people, of course, that are in the military that is involved with what's, as far as watching what's going on, knowing military law. For instance, that country and western singer Johnson, I forget his name. I think his last name is Johnson. But in any event, they talk about the old timers, the people before them, or the older people in the service that have been talking about this problem for quite some time. Especially a lot of them that have already retired and realizing that something is going to be done. If you listen very carefully to what's going on, a lot of our problems are going to disappear. I mean, let's take, for instance, the IRS and the Federal Reserve. It's become very clear this week for anyone that's been listening to Trump. He's outright came. So he spoke about it on Rogan. And he's given a lot of hints over the past month or two. The IRS is on its way out. It's going to be shut down. Income tax is not a necessity. The Federal Reserve is going to be destroyed by gold. We got to be listening to a lot of the news, and it is hard to get all of it. There's so much out there, and to try to figure out where to go. We put together a page here under our welcome tab, and it's the second one down. It says up-to-date news. And this is where I get a lot of my source from. X22, N We Know, SGT Report, Q News Patriot, Christian Patriot News, Stephen Gardner, Tucker Carlson, and of course Donald Trump, and Bongino Report, JR Eclipse, and for medical purposes I put Dr. Eric Berg because he's got a lot of, he solves a lot of problems without going to the pharmaceuticals to solve your problems, and most problems can be solved through, just vitamins and supplements and different things, minerals that you need that you're not getting because we don't get enough food anymore, processed food problems, and so on and so forth. But we have a lot of people, and again, if you're really listening close, and again, it does take some time, but there is a plan, and the military is ready to go. Trump, anybody that has followed Q, and I know a lot of people think that Q was not anything that's real, and was fake, or whatever it is that they think about it, because they didn't understand. You know, what you put out in 2017 and 2018, I think it started in 2017, late 2017, and but in 2018 and 2019 particularly, I believe, was the time period that Q had put a lot of things out. But on a couple occasions, it was Q had put out, and Q is military intelligence. There is military intelligence at the highest level that actually is called Q. Q was military intelligence back in the days of Lincoln. So it's been around for quite some time, and I'm sure it was even before that. And there is there are provisions. It is true that our founding fathers did not want a standing army on the soil, but it is necessary to deal with that to some degree. But of course, it has to be isolated. But there has been provisions made that for enemies domestic, and indeed we do have enemies domestic. This is a huge, huge conspiracy going all the way down to your town, right up through your state and right up to the federal government. And this is huge, extremely huge. There's over 450,000 indictments out there, which is the latest number I've heard about, but some people think it's higher than that, and it may very well be. And again, this is a military movement. You know, you take certain individuals we don't need an indictment for, that they'll be... and maybe they have them anyway, but I don't know the details on that. But we don't really need indictments on certain people if the military is going to make a move, particularly on individuals that are in power, okay? The people who are sitting in power that have their hands on the controls and have leading us into slavery. And that's where we're at. We're actually pretty much in slavery. We're in a statutory prison to begin with. It gets pretty frightening, when you hear some of these stories of some of these people that have been arrested for the craziest things, and anybody that, really is pushing hard against the powers that be, they are at risk. But in any event, the military is the only way. And we've seen a lot of information on a lot of military movement across the United States. It's been going on for quite some time now. And we understand they're in position in order to deal with an upheaval that's about to hit our American cities. We have there's people that say we have 14 million people that have come into this country illegally. We've heard as high as 18 or 19 million. I've even heard in the 20 or 21 million. If you got 20 or 21 million people, that's more people than the state of New York, than the people who live in New York. I think New York is about 18 million or just under 19 million or around 19 million people. So that's a lot of people. And most of those people are in our major cities. And also they've migrated up into other towns outside of the cities, but nevertheless, it's mostly in the cities. We see what has been taking place over in Europe and around the world with a lot of upheavals and people causing all kinds of havoc in the streets and so on. Well, we're about ready to have the same thing. We kind of got a little taste of that over the past couple of years ago. Where law enforcement didn't even act because they were told to stand down. And why they listened to that, well, that's because we don't have sheriffs. We don't have sheriffs that know the law. We don't have sheriffs that understand that they need to take control over all police forces during this time period. And as a matter of fact, this is one of the things we're trying to teach and encourage the sheriff's departments to do. These sheriffs need to start to address the power and the authority that they have, and to make it clear to all of the local police forces and the state police within their counties. And a lot of these problems we wouldn't have if we didn't have the 17th Amendment, and if we didn't have the 16th Amendment, and if we had educated sheriffs. Those three things alone would have prevented all the havoc that has come into our nation here, and is about ready to blow up, to explode. So, Q talks, and again, Q is military intelligence. Q is not one person. It is a group of people. that are always in operational, looking and planning for potential problems across America, particularly within, but also without. And so they've had plans for quite some time. They update them, of course, I'm sure. But again, that's the only salvation we have. But this could have been solved if we had educated sheriffs, and if the states had control of, from their perspective, Congress. You know, the state is to have a say. Right now, the state, all the states, they have no power or authority of any control what goes on in Congress, because they don't have control of their senators. And if a state doesn't have control of their senators, the special interest groups has control of their senators, because they're elected like our representatives, and the special interest groups, of course, control them. So therein is the problem, and that's a major problem. And they never could have taken this nation over the way they did. But this is so huge. The tentacles go so deep. And if you go back and read a lot of the things back in the early, in the 20th century, the earliest part of the 20th century particularly, you know, it already it was speaking about the major problem that we have with enemies within, and that even back then it was so huge. They've taken control, they've rewritten history, they've taken control of our courts, they've taken control of everything you hear about. They've even taken control of our religion. And a lot of people, and of course, we're in a statutory prison, we're fleeced all the time for monies and constantly being put under the thumb. Not only by local government, but also goes all the way up to even into the federal level, where they've taken so much control that they don't have the power or the authority, constitutionally speaking, to do or have. But that's where we're at. And so you got to look at the big picture. For the unbelievers, well, then you're going to be a lot more frightened than those who know what's going on, especially when all hell breaks loose, and it is about to break loose, I'm pretty sure it is. Q talks about 10 days of darkness or silence, and we don't know exactly what that means, but I think that's when all hell is going to break loose. And the fear of the people is going to, at that point, realize something needs to be done. A lot of people, you know, thankfully, most people, a lot of people are awake. They don't have the full understanding, and none of us have the full understanding, of course, but they don't have the you know, enough information to feel reasonably comfortable to know that there is light at the end of this tunnel that we're about to enter. And so those people who don't have that ability to see that light because they lack that knowledge, well, then, you know, it's going to be tougher for them. But for those who have a lot of hope and resting in a lot of things we've heard, and you know, the key thing to all this, again, is keeping your eyes and your ears open, understanding that truth is self-evident. That's a biblical principle, and it rests everywhere, anywhere in this world. The truth is self-evident. Just listen long enough, and you'll figure it out. Truth is consistent, okay? And it's, if you hear things and you hear a little contradiction here, another contradiction there, or it's contradictive of other news that appears to be, you know, reliable, well, there's a problem then. You got to look for that consistency. I'll tell you that the information that I've been listening to for quite some time now, which again is listed out here, we just went through that a little while ago, I find these people very consistent. Yeah, they have different perspectives, different point of view, different knowledge levels, and so on, and some report more heavily on this thing or that thing. But generally speaking, they are pretty consistent and harmonious in the information that they give out. And when you look, of course, you know, the major networks, I mean, you know, they're just totally untrustworthy at all altogether. So anyway, we'll all know the bottom line in the next 3 months, whether we have a republic or not. And I do believe we will have a republic, and I do believe major, major changes are going to take place. I do think, I look to see what Trump has done, the players that he has pulled together, even some heavy-duty Democrats that are really good people that have come and changed and, you know, come over to the other side, to the side of the light, I like to say. So, a lot of things are going to happen, interesting times, But those who are not understanding at this point of what's really going on in the plan to save this nation, well, it's going to get pretty scary, a lot more scarier for those people than those of us who do know. So, anyway, next question.
Is it reasonable to expect the Supremes or their clerks to read all 155 pages?
Well, you broke up a little bit. Start over again, Jan. You broke up. Try it again.
Is it reasonable to expect the Supremes or their clerks to read all 155 pages? Was this indictment made for educational purposes, or is there going to be a restoration? These are serious matters not to be trifled with.
Well, you're absolutely correct on that. And look, this is their job. This is what they do. This is what they wanted to do, is to get involved participating in decisions at the major level, at the highest level, which is the Supreme Court level, which really ultimately shouldn't have much to do with we the people, because a lot of the things that they have to correct and change and declare and make a declaration in order and for the lower courts to obey and participate in common law and opposed to civil law, a lot of these things have nothing to do with their powers and authority we gave them. For instance, the major problem in the courts is the Rules Enabling Act, which the United States Supreme Court back in 1938, I believe it was, where they came up with the rules, which was in 1934, and they didn't have the power to do that. Congress gave them power that we gave to Congress, which they didn't have power to pass their power on to someone else. And their rules that they put, because we're under the rules of common law, there was no need for them to create new rules. But it was through the rules, particularly Rule 1 and Rule 2 of the rules that they created, abrogated the common law and provided for the continuation and and the support of the United States Inc. And of course that was created and came about in the Organic Act of 1871, and they've been building upon that ever since. And that is the statutory prison that they've been building. But the Rules Enabling Act is one of the major problems that has changed the courts. It has abrogated the common law and put in its place civil law or municipality law or Roman law, whatever you want to call it. Different people see it from different perspectives. Most lawyers think we're under Roman law. But all those laws are the same law. It goes back to the law of the city. It traces itself back ultimately to Babylon. And it's Babylonian law written, which is the law of the city, in order to control the people, to enslave the people, to keep the people under thumb. And that's what we're having. That's where we're at. Now, these justices know. We do have a few morons up there, unfortunately. Some of these justices really have no desire to uphold the Constitution. They've been put in place for a different purpose. But we do have others that do know the truth. And I think they've been suppressed for quite some time, and that's why they really haven't been able to do much. But I think they're under protection now. I think they're also under stress, you know. And that's why we have so many good rulings coming out from the United States Supreme Court. I do believe as long as this reaches them, they will read it, and they have no choice but to read it. You would think that their clerks, who will read it first, would pass it up and say, whoa, you better take a look at this. But it is true that lawyers have a tough time seeing truth. They really do. Their minds have been so polluted, not only for basic education that we've all gone through, but going through law school, going through particularly the bar teachings, and becoming bar members and playing along with the good old boys club, so to speak. They've been really pressed upon them. There's a lot of money to be made, and money takes control of people, unfortunately. But they really have been demoralized, and so it's hard for them to see the truth. It's extremely hard. You know, anybody who doesn't have a law background and they read this paper, they'll understand most, if not all of it, because it is common sense. Lawyers don't have common sense. They got statutes, they got rules, they got regulations. That's what they've got. They've got the statutes, the civil law is what they have, the law of the city. And this is all foreign to them, and it is in opposition to everything that they have been taught, everything. And so it is difficult for them to see and hear. But at the highest level, and it's unfortunate that most of the federal judges, even though they're reasonably educated, they're also highly demoralized. And they are handpicked. Every lawyer is handpicked by the bar. If the bar doesn't approve you, you are not going to become a judge. You're definitely not going to become a federal judge. That's for absolute surety. But those federal judges that are put up, anybody that watches what's going on there, when the Senate comes together and the Judiciary Committee particularly, and they interview these people, they're morons. They don't even know anything about the Constitution. And that's what's filling our courts, and this is a major problem. But to get up to that United States Supreme Court, by God's mercy, most of these people are educated highly in both the common law to some degree, because they're readers and there's a lot of information out there that can free them and liberate them, their minds. So I think a lot of those people do understand, and I do believe if they do read and they'll understand this. But the bottom line is this, and if you read through the paper, we come to the finale page, ultimately, the conclusion of the matter, is that the blood of patriots, if that's where we end up, is in their hands because they have refused to do what's necessary. The United States Supreme Court's major, most important job is to oversee the federal court system and to correct the problems down on the lower levels. Now, they have a hands-off policy, unfortunately, and they don't really do that. But if you press and push them to do that, and that's what this paper does, I don't think they have a choice because they, too, will understand America is done if we don't get our courts back. America is finished. We can't have government by consent or anything without our court system. But it does begin from our perspective from the sheriffs, okay? But the bottom line, and I'll just read the bottom line. Let me just read the last couple of paragraphs of this paper. Now, there are some other papers attached to this. We have the original paper that we sent in, which was a writ quo warranto, ultimately. We have a copy of that attached and some other papers, particularly on the 13th Amendment. But let me read the last couple of paragraphs and of this paper. And I put here, therefore, it is the solemn duty of the United States Supreme Court to speak. Whereas silence can only be equated with fraud where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading. We the people demand that the United States Supreme Court declare the restoration of our courts of justice, where no judge may enter or intercept with their repugnant summary judgment or impose their will in any way upon our courts of justice, where a magistrate will uphold the will of the tribunal being we the people that we ourselves will administer to. We the people stand at the precipice of losing our natural law republic, as de facto President Obama said during the 2016 White House Correspondents' Dinner, where he predicted Hillary Clinton's presidency in 2017, said, the end of the republic has never looked better. That's the mindset of these people. This shows the intent of their de facto democracy. Therefore, we the people are resolved, and as our founding fathers, we too pledge our lives, our fortune, our sacred honor, and if you refuse to act, the blood of innocent patriot Americans will be on your hands, and we will require of you what justice demands. Nuremberg, presented and ordered under seal, dated October 10th, 2024, and we served it on October 11th. So that's kind of that's the end paper. But you know, if you go through this paper, it lays out all of the major problems we have that these people have, you know, destroyed our judicial system. And you can read through at least the highlights, the exposition of our presentment. It talks about the abrogation of the United States of America, the abrogation of the law of the land, the difference between a republic and democracy, and we are not a republic. The king of our courts and the law of equity. The king of our court is God. Prayer and the Bible in the school. The right to keep and bear arms. Why governments disarm people. Writ habeas corpus, which they seem to just discard all day long. We filed about 100 habeas corpuses, and we've only had maybe two successes, and both of them was not necessarily by any declaration. It was just that the court gave up and just shut it down and let the person go. And that's only two out of 100. That's it. Prayer in the Bible in school, right to keep and bear arms. Why government? Oh, I read that. Okay. Court access without cost, the right to practice law. Fully informed juries, grand juries, petty juries, jury stackering and tampering, the 12 lies within their handbook that feeds this this problem within our juries, the balance of power, the amendment which Amendment 13, Amendment 16, Amendment 17, 16, yeah, direct tax, okay, judicial comity versus common law, you know, they take... They take trial court decisions, which are so corrupt, and they build law off of the corruption of their decisions within trial court, and they call that common law. That's how, you know, how far off the planet they are. The rules of the rules of common law courts, which are really are maxims. How common law requires a sheriff. We've lost our sheriff. We recently did a research on the sheriffs in every state in the union to see once where we were at. I didn't expect to find what I found, but we've lost probably, well, at least 70% of the sheriffs across our nation. 70%. They don't have the powers. They've taken the powers. They've stripped the powers away from our sheriffs. You know, we have, what we're doing here is we have, well, let me pop over to another, but let me finish this. We talk about oath and bonds and faith and their faithful performance and, of course, the order and the judge. Look, this paper should be read by everybody. It's an education, and especially if you're in court and you want to learn, you know, there's a lot in here that you can use. You can cut and paste and use in your own case, but it gives you a good understanding and on how these courts are running and what's going on and what needs to be done to correct them. And this paper was written for that purpose, to list the very specifics on how they need to bring back our courts of justice. So we detail every point of that. But anyway, we do have joining our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. It's up to us to learn about our sheriffs. It's up to us to visit our sheriffs, to make sure that they're educated, to give them the proper tools and information, and to do it in a delicate way. I mean, this is why, if you read through the charter, which we spoke a little bit about earlier, and the resolutions that we put together, it is designed to do a number of things. And one of the things it is designed to do, because we do give a copy of this to the sheriff, is to really kind of put notice in a subtle way to the sheriff. You're either going to learn the Constitution because you're ignorant to it and you don't know it, just like we were and are now becoming more knowledgeable of it, of course. But if you want to remain ignorant and you refuse to learn the common law, you refuse to learn the Constitution and understand the powers and the authorities and your true job and what you should be doing and how you should be protecting people from an overreaching government, which you are not doing, and protecting people from the federal government entering into your county without power, without authority, without a proper court order. And you allow these things to happen, and these people come in with their SWAT and their SWAT teams, and they destroy families, they kill people, they kill our animals, they traumatize us, and they traumatize our children. And if you're not going to fix that, see, this is the message that's delivered by the information that we are delivering to the sheriff. It's put together in a very subtle way, so, you know, but eventually it should take, they should take heed and realize, we're going to remove you. We're here to support you or remove you. It's up to you. So again, read the literature that we put together. Read the charter. Read the resolution. Read this paper. Give a copy of this paper to the sheriff also. But you give him a copy of that information. You get him a copy of the book, Government by Consent. You get him a copy of the sheriff's handbook. You can download that in PDF form, but I really think you should get it in a written word in book form. It's much more powerful. They'll take it more serious. And you get a copy of those things to the sheriff, and you give him 4 to 6 weeks. Let him digest this information. And you make that appointment and say, hey, I'd like you to come speak to our group. This is why you need a committee of safety. United we stand, divided we fall. This is not something that could be done by one person. Government by consent takes the community, the people working together, those who are willing to put their time in to do what has to be done, to become self-educated, to educate our children, to take back our schools, to take back control of our government representatives, to remove these people through recall. When they break their oaths, when they don't do their job, especially the sheriff, and then have that sheriff come in. We also put together a paper on questions to ask the sheriff. We don't want to embarrass them, but they may end up embarrassing themselves. But we don't want to embarrass them. We want to be very careful. We want to be a little gentle with them, but we want to be firm at the same time. So we did put together a series of questions that we suggest you might want to ask your sheriff, with a plan on how to ask those questions. You know, that's found in the video, approaching your sheriff, that we looked at a little while ago. And so the thing is by the time that sheriff comes to meet up with the people, he's going to have an idea of what you're going to be asking him. And he's going to understand and realize what he's got to do. Because, you know, again, we intend on... If you do everything correctly and you build your committees of safety and start working particularly in the education of our children, that's the place where you're going to pull in huge numbers of people. You know, a committee of safety with 20 or 30 people, after you hit a couple of schools, you'll be in the hundreds. You'll have a lot of people in the community that will come together to deal with this problem with the children in our school as far as these board of, education boards. Whereas these people are going to join up, you're going to get a lot of people joining up from that alone. And you're going to become powerful. Right now, the power of the county to control the sheriff particularly, and this is true with any elected official anyway, but let's look at the sheriff. It is the committee man of the county. My county has 248 or 49 committee men. That's one committee man for each election district in my county where I live. And that's the committee man. That's the statutory committee man. We have to become the same thing and mirror that. And they will fall apart through attrition because they always have. But a lot of the people that have joined into that system in order to do something good for their community, once they discover us, because they, at some point in time, they start to realize that they're suckers, that they're being used to just get criminals into positions, into different political positions. And after a while, it may take a couple of years before they realize the whole thing is a con job. Okay? They're controlled by party bosses. 4 people control the county. 4 people above that control the state. And a small amount of people above that control the federal, all the states. Okay? And that's the structure of all the party bosses, which gives you the criminal on the right to choose from or the criminal on the left. And again, once they realize that, they leave. I know I was a committee man for a couple of terms. It's disgusting. It takes a while to see the disgust. I came in with open eyes to begin with because I was already becoming educated in that particular problem and situation. But in any event, we learned very quickly how serious the problems are there. So they're controlled. They're not doing the job they need to do. But I will tell you one thing. When that county chairman calls the sheriff onto the carpet, or anybody that within their election, political election, positions that they fill, and they say, hey, look, we need to talk to you. We have a problem. I'd like to see you on Tuesday at a certain time, or we can meet on Thursday, whatever, at a certain time. Believe me, they come and they meet or they talk on the phone, whatever the case may be, and whatever the command is, they follow. okay? Because they fear the county chair, because the county chair could prevent them from becoming elected. Because it's the county committeemen that put these people onto the ballot. But we have to resurrect the true committeeman, the committee of safety, the committee of safety that our founding fathers used to create this great nation and to control it, and pass it on to us. But it was stolen from us. It was covered up, and distorted, and the minions of the New World Order, which is the bar attorneys, the esquires, they're the minions of the New World Order. They've been nibbling away at our liberty, nibbling away at our republic for years on end, for hundreds of years now. And they've destroyed everything that our founding fathers put together. Only the people can change that. Only the people can save America. Only the people can make sure that we have government by consent. And they can only do that by coming together under committees of safety. There is no other way. Trump can take the military and give us back to the people that which we've lost. But the people will only lose it again. Like Benjamin Franklin said, you got a republic if you can keep it. A republic requires the people to be active. It requires an education. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. So we have to become educated in the knowledge of how our system works, what due process is, how our political process works. And if people are not willing to do this, then you can't have a republic. You can't have liberty. Your children will be enslaved. It'll only be a matter of time. This whole thing will be back again. And eventually America will be lost. So, again, we need to do what we got to do. Education is the key, and we have to control our sheriffs. Join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Get involved, get a committee of safety going if there's not one that's starting up in your area, and let's take this nation back. It's up to you. Any other questions, Jan?
Excuse me, yes. I have four questions. I'm going to read them all. They pertain to the choice of personnel, military personnel, and positions that are listed in the presentment. And I think the answer is going to be the same for all, so I'll just go ahead and run through them. The first is about General Okinson, who was the chief of the National Guard Bureau. He retired on August 2nd, 2024. The second is General Glenn D. Van Hert. He retired on August 30th, 2024. The next is Darcy E. Crandall, Jr., and he just recently turned over duties as a Judge Advocate General of the Navy. And the last one is Major General Junius W. Jones, Air Force. He was born in 1890, and I don't know when he retired. Must have been in the middle 1900s. So all of these people are no longer in any serving in any military position. So what effect does that have on the choice of personnel?
Well, a couple of things. I wasn't aware of that. On the one hand, if you go up onto the internet and look these things up, these are the names that are given to us. But the position is the key. It's the JAG. And so whoever's in that position will receive that letter anyway. And it's pretty, I don't know whether it's frightening or really comforting that three of them have really been taken out of power. They retired or whatever the case may be, just in August, two of them in August and one of them just recently. So it's pretty much very close all at the same time. And that very well could be because they were replaced. And so that could be interesting. The question is who replaced them? But we do know, Trump talks about these generals that are morons, particularly the ones in Washington. He says they're not the real generals. I've always heard, and I've heard for a long time, that sometimes these generals and these people in high-ranking positions that are really problematic, they get rid of them by, you know, just sending them back up and up the line become, you know, higher ranking individuals, and then eventually push them over to Washington and they're out of the system. I don't know if you've listened recently. I think I'm pretty sure Trump talked about this on the Rogan interview. But if he didn't, he spoke about it recently on other interviews. But I'm pretty sure he did talk about it. And he said, look, at these generals in Washington, you know, he didn't use the word morons, but he probably used something as bad as that. I'll use the word morons. They're dumb. And he talked about, matter of fact, I remember he did talk about this on Rogan and other places. And he says that he flew in to one of these places in the Middle East to see what was going on when he became president, because they said it's going to take 5 years to take out this one particular group of terrorists out there in the Middle East. And when he flew out there and he met with the generals and he spoke with the generals out there, and they said, no way, it'll take 4 to 5 weeks for us to do the job, not 4 or 5 years. And Trump even asked, well, why haven't you done this already? Because we were told different things to do different things. We just follow orders. We can't do anything outside of just being obedient to the law orders. We don't know what the really strategies are at the upper level on that. But yeah, you want us to take them out? We'll get the job done in 4 weeks. And they did. They ended the war. They ended the whole system, and we pulled out. We just annihilated them. Okay? This is the situation. Now, we've heard from the very beginning that Trump has 200 generals that's working with him. Okay? I don't know how many generals are out there, but this is going back into, you know, 2018, 2019. This kind of talk has been around. And if there are others, and I'm sure there are, he's probably got a lot more. So he's got the military on the side. They took an oath. He's the president of the United States. He's making a move. It's going to happen. It's pretty clear to most people now, at least 60%, maybe more than that, because that's kind of what the numbers look like, that we have a serious problem, and we're about to lose this republic. And unless the military makes that move, we're going to lose everything. So I appreciate the correction on that, and maybe we'll take a look to see if we can get the information on the in details of the people that are in, and see if we can't make contact with them to make sure that they did get our paperwork. But I do believe that it would have went to the whoever's holding the title of those particular areas. So, but we appreciate it, and we'll take a look at that. Okay, any other questions?
Nope, that's all for tonight, John.
All right. Okay, we only got a couple people in the queue. If anybody wants to get into the queue, again, if you're on a phone, it's a *6 and a 1. If you're on an app or a browser, there should be a button there to get into the queue. So we'll take our first caller here. It looks like Bob. Bob, what state you in? You got the mic.
Hey, John. Man, I love everything you say. I'm sort of like those generals that did it in weeks instead of years. We've got two local issues here. One has to do with freedom of speech in these public meeting hearings. And the other is a commissioner's court meeting tomorrow. On the first one, in the freedom of speech, as I told you maybe the last time I talked, on the second, I talked at the Supreme Court of Appeals in Austin, and I got the guy presiding violating his oath and breaking the law on not allowing me to broadcast a meeting of the State Commission on Judicial Conduct, where he said I could not broadcast that meeting. So anyway, I presented that we have a statute 551.023 that any citizen can record at any open meeting. So on the 22nd, I got to meet with one of our Supreme Court justices. This is on the one side of the Supreme Laws, it's the Supreme Court and then the Court of Appeals. And I got him on tape, and I put it on YouTube just a few days ago, that all of the Supreme Court hearings are broadcast live on the Internet. So by inference or connection, to all of the judges we have here at the county level that are taking the prerogative to forbid our free speech, to not record in those meetings seems to have been abrogated by the Supreme Court justice on the 22nd. So I've been in like four of these courts where they made me remove my camera from the courtroom. So now I feel like we have the grounds to actually confront the local judges that we have, that everything should be broadcast in every one of these meetings. The idea of our founders was to have large juries of 12 and sometimes up to 24, and to have as many citizens in attendance to see how the courts are run, to propagate what the law is, you know, wherever there's a court being held. So anyway, that's the freedom of speech in a courtroom. The other thing that we have tomorrow, and we may be able to get rid of 5 justices of the peace tomorrow, and I've got at least 5 people that are showing up to talk on this subject. What they have done is they have falsified their time records for themselves, 5 of them, and all of their staff, who are writing down that they worked for 40 hours when in fact they've only worked for 36, because every one of them is taking off Friday afternoons. So I'm thinking that they're falsifying these time records, and we really have a case against those guys, that they have violated their oath and they have ruined the trust that we have in them by lying on their timesheets. So, I think it's possible. The way the Lord is laying all this in my lap, I never dreamed that I'd get to talk directly for more than a few minutes and to get a recording of a Supreme Court justice who's running for office again. He's on the ballot. That's when you can talk to these guys, saying that all of the Supreme Court hearings are broadcast live. So anyway, I'm optimistic. It's all about the Lord. It's all about following first law, the laws of nature, creation, the laws of nature's God, the Bible. That's in, you know, the first sentence of 1776. And also in Texas, on our platform, it's the exact same thing, and all of these guys swear an oath to Texas, the Constitution of Texas, and to the United States, to follow specifically that. We can't violate, as Blackstone said, the laws of nature, which is creation, or the laws of nature's God is the Bible. Now, on your committees of safety and your precinct chairs or committeemen, whatever you call it, it's not so much working for the party, either Republican or Democrat. It's working for where we swore an oath to, and that is for the laws of God. Those cannot be contradicted. And, I'm really optimistic the way the Lord is laying this all in my lap with these connections, being able to speak at the Supreme Court of Appeals on the 2nd, being able to speak to Supreme Court Justice on the 22nd, exactly about this loss of freedom of speech in our local courts that they are taking from us, that would have kept 2 people that I know, one guy that has sat down here and listened to you on your Monday night calls, and he's in jail now for a year, and it could have been me. But anyway, I'm optimistic, and I'm laying it all on the Lord and the laws that he gave us, the laws that our founders followed that allowed them to defeat the baddest military ever on earth. So anyway, I'm optimistic. I think if we change our focus on our committees of safety and using people that are actually in, your committeeman positions, to change their focus on who their loyalty is, and that's to the oath, to nature's God and the laws of nature's God. So anyway, I think this is pretty simple if we'll just get back to the Lord and tomorrow will be a big day. We'll see what happens in Commissioner's Court, because all of these justices of the peace, or I think it's all of them, I know that it's more than a couple, and you know, to actually get some real justice and get back to the laws as written, not as they feel like they have the right to dictate. And all some of the Blackstone stuff has just been laid in my lap here just this week, and it all supports my argument. But anyway, I wanted to throw that out there, and I don't think it's as dismal as you think it, you know, is. I think, you know, we as committeemen or precinct chairs, following the oath that we swore, the oath that all these judges and everybody that's elected, from the president down to the you know, the governor and our county judges, you know, they swore to that, and they have to abide it. And we have to know enough and educate enough people, especially the candidates that will be running in those positions. So anyway, I managed to get one commissioner removed by getting another one elected, and she's very in tune with following God's law. So I'm just going to leave it there. Maybe I'm not making sense, but I hope I am. But it seems clear to me that we have a lot of opportunity.
All right. Well, yeah, I believe you said you're talking up in Texas. So I guess you're in Texas, right?
Yes.
And I presume you're talking about the Supreme Court of Texas.
I am.
Yeah. And, you know, look, at they say one thing, but they get in the power, they do another thing. They maintain the status quo. Once in a while, you can get a rogue individual in office that might start to do the right thing. They usually don't last too long because they'll work hard to get rid of them. But in any event, because our whole system is corrupt, it's really pretty bad. I don't think people realize how serious the problem is and how large the problem is. You know, just to make a correction or two here, you had mentioned 12 or 25 concerning the jury, or 24, you said, actually. 12 is the trial jury, and 25 is the grand jury. And you can't have any kind of a court system that runs with anything less than 12 is not a court of record. It's unlawful court system. You know, unfortunately, even in that, we can go back into the mid-1800s, 1850, already the court system was solidly corrupt. And I'm sure they wouldn't corrupt throughout the whole United States, but it was a large section of it. They're already corrupting them. You know, they've been trying to get rid of the trial juries for a long, long time. Even Dave Teach, I know... my brother, who went to law school, mentioned, and he never became a lawyer, he said he just too much hassle, he went a different direction. But anyway, he did go to law school, and he said some of the things they talked about in law school when he went was that, you know, the jury system is no good. People sitting on a jury, they don't know the law. Really, it should be a group of lawyers that should be sitting there making this decision as a jury. Can you imagine lawyers making a decision as a jury? I mean, you think we have problems now. At least once in a while we get a runaway jury, a jury that disregards the instructions of the judge and disregards the things, or comes in with certain knowledge and realizes that they have the power to nullify things. And of course, those situations you can get justice, and it just happens. It happens from time to time. But, you know, I've looked into the handbooks that they give out, particularly on the federal level. And those handbooks are just full of lies, and they take the power away from the people. And they tell the people in those handbooks that just what the judge tells them, you know. That, look, you get to decide the facts, but not the law. The law is the way I tell you it is, and you have to be obedient, and you have to follow. If they broke that law, you have to find them guilty, you know. And of course, there is no law as far as their statutes are concerned that could be applied against the people. And again, you know, we're ignorant. We're our own worst enemies. Okay. Now, you mentioned the committeemen, and I appreciate what you're trying to say about the committeemen. You know, when we went in to become committeemen, we went in with good intentions. We went in with the intention that we're going to try to do something and really get things fixed, get problems fixed. But there's too many problems. You see, when you have two parties, No republic can survive political parties. George Washington spoke about this. Jefferson spoke, a lot of our founding fathers, but particularly George Washington. George Washington, his farewell speech was at least two-thirds of his speech talking about factions, talking about political parties, talking about the destruction they're already doing, and that they're going to destroy our entire system, okay? Our entire political and judicial system, particularly the political system. With the political system goes the judicial system, because they control the legislators, they control everything. You know, there's nothing, when you go, and believe me, I've been in a lot of battles with a lot of people in the court system, and when you go to battle with these people or with anybody that is any kind of an authority in government anywhere, the moment you start talking to these people to try to correct them, all of a sudden you're blocked and met by an army of lawyers. You can never get to these people. And
I think you're not catching what I'm getting at. I've seated 10 precinct chairs, committeemen here in Smith County. When I recruited them, the only thing is they had to know that our laws are based on creation in the Bible, as Blackstone said.
I understood what you were talking about, and I understand what you're saying now, but I'm also trying to make another point, okay, that the whole system is not working as your little world is. You know, we all live in our own little world. We live in our counties. We live in our towns. We live in our homes. We live in our houses. And so that's our world, okay? There is a county here in New York. When I went into the committeeman process, there was a county, it was led by a retired cop. He was a state police. And he had, you know, awakened to the problem. And he was very, very well informed on the problems and what's going on. And he was able to climb to the position of the chair within his county. And so he had a county that was really working well, and they had a lot of control, but it was isolated to his county. The state cut him off in the sense that he couldn't bring power and authority back up into the state level to try to bring righteousness to the people up in that level. But his influence was the influence within his county. And it sounds like that's where you're at. You've got some good influence going, and you've got a county that may be pushing the right way. But generally speaking, remember, there are 3,134 counties in the United States. And you're up against party bosses. It's very difficult to take over the party bosses. You know, New York is extremely difficult. And I know a lot of the East Coast states are extremely difficult, particularly Jersey, for instance, Connecticut, New York. You know, really, really tough because of the way they set the system up. You know, we're under the clutches of evil, ultimately, you know. The party, you cannot have political parties and a republic. A republic cannot survive political parties. That's why the committeemen have got to become free and independent. And that's why we're teaching people to separate. We don't even teach people about the committeeman process. Okay, we talk a little bit about it because we use the structure that they use because it's the only logical structure in order to bring people and put them into the political vacancies. But the thing, and because you got to work with people in other counties, and that's where the problem comes. You know, you can control your county to a major degree. You could also try to work to get good people as representatives, of course, in a federal level. And depending on how they break up your senators and your depends on what they would call them, assemblymen maybe. I know here in New York we call them assemblymen. It's like a Congress, okay? So, you know, you get to elect them. But even in New York, what they did is they even took those positions and they gerrymandered those positions, okay? Which means you have to work with two or three counties in order to elect an individual to work together, to walk the papers, to get them onto the ballot. So a lot of the areas here in New York, it used to be, you know, we'd have 62 senators, state senators, okay, which were elected by the people. But now those 62 is gerrymandered along all of the other counties. So again, you have to work outside the counties. And if you don't have a county that's doing the right thing, that has the right perspective on the way things should be, doing things hopefully in a godly way, let's say in a moral way, you know, they don't have to necessarily be Christians. They don't have to be, religious in any way, but it's morally minded. You know, people that are under the influence of Christianity around them, without being part of Christianity, you know, morality sort of leaks into their life. And if we teach our children in school the morals of the Bible, okay, that'll leak into all of the children's life. It's not about, you know, making them, you know, a particular Christian or making them this denomination or that denomination, but it's about training them up on righteousness, because that's what the Bible will do if we can get the Bible back into the schools.
And see, the way we can get the Bible back into schools is make people know that the first sentence of the entirety of U.S. law in the U.S. Code annotated are the laws that our founders had. And all I'm asking, I don't want to compete in the party system. I want to compete with what our founders competed.
Right, but the only way
the laws of God.
The only way
the laws of God, and He made it happen.
Right. Well, and again, it shall be forever encouraged. Okay, they didn't require it, but it should be forever encouraged. And when you have a place like New York State, when I was a child, I remember when this happened. It was, I believe, it was in 1962. I was young, but I remember, because I went to a Catholic school, and across the street from us was a public school. Literally, right across the street, there was a public school. And they used to come over to get religious instructions over in our school, okay? And that's when they had removed the Bible and prayer from school during that process. So they were coming over to us and using our auditorium for those who would break away. I don't know if that still happens, but it did happen in the beginning, at least when I was a kid. But look, at the problem is we got to save the whole nation. The people have to rise up in every single county and take care of business. We have to, and again, we don't have to destroy the committeeman process that exists. That falls away by attrition on its own. Because, again, it's all corrupt, maybe not in your county, maybe not in the county that I was speaking about. And, by the way, that guy passed away, so who knows who the chairman is up there now. But the point is that people will go in and they'll work for a couple of terms. You know, it's a two-year term, and maybe they'll get elected two or three times, and next thing you know, they leave. They're constantly losing people because they figure out the problem, and they figure out that they're a sucker, that they're only there being used by the political parties to bring in the people that they want, not the people that the people want. And there's a lot of chicanery going on in that whole system. My point is this, is that the true committee man is not an elected individual. It's not an appointed individual. It's an individual that decides, I want to do something, and I want to have government by consent, and so I'm going to go and become part of the Committee of Safety. You don't get elected, you don't get appointed. You decide to participate, and you decide to exercise your unalienable right of government by consent. And that's the key.
Okay, so, and
let me finish the whole picture here, though. Once that process is going on, and look at the best way to get this thing going, and you learn, a lot of people will learn about that Committee of Safety, is by dealing with your schools, okay? For instance, Dutchess County, I think we have about 14 different school districts. Maybe we have more, but we're going to have to number them. We're going to go start an investigation on that with our Committee of Safety, because it's the first thing we want to focus in on, is trying to take the schools back. But every time you go to a school district, okay, and we send out a postcard with information inviting people to a meeting concerning the problems in the school, and that we're going to address the school district, the school board, on a certain date, and please come to the meeting on a certain day, on a certain month, and so on, and that particular meeting be for the sole purpose of discussing the problems in the school, what the people want, what's going on in the school, what do we want the school, the boards to do, and what we want our children to learn. And then once you do that, and you come together, and you figure out, and you get your speakers together, then you go to the school board meeting. And you have one behind another, because if they cut one off, there's someone else to step up to continue on where you left off. And you bring up the whole thing, and you lay it out, and you go in with the sheriff, and you require these people to do the right thing, and you have a writ quo warranto in your back pocket. And when these people decide that they're not going to follow the will of the people, that we are the masters, they are the servants, where they've twisted that whole thing around. So once you do that and you let it be known, now if they reject and just will not comply, then we serve them a writ qua wanto. They got 3 days, and you eliminate them from their seats. They have to forfeit their seats if they don't respond within 3 days. The law is the law. We can take it to the courts and execute that. Now, once that's done, anybody can seize control of that seat until the next appointment or election, however it is that they put that together. Okay, and then the people, the parents, or the people of that community. Okay, that's power, and that's going to create a larger response to people to become part of the Committee of Safety. And within those groups of people going in for that purpose, some people that are committee men that are going to go to these meetings and see what's going on, they're going to leave that the statutory process, and they're going to join the free and independent committee men, and they will bring a lot of knowledge and information that they have learned on how the structures work, when the political structures and how things work, and even teach a lot with the rules on operating Robert's Rules of Order. So there's a lot to that. There's a way to grow and get things going, but we have to become free and independent. We got to get rid of party bosses. The chairman has no more power, no more authority, and no more vote than any other person in that group. And the chairman should be able to be removed at any time just by popular vote. There shouldn't be a necessity of two-thirds or anything like that, okay? And but here in New York, everyone's appointed coming from the top down. And the whole thing is fixed. They make it look like there's a voting going on, but it's all counted in secret, just like they count our votes in secret through these machines. And nobody witnesses the counting of the votes. The committeemen should be in the election district of their own election district. One committeeman should be in that place, and maybe more if possible, but at least one, okay, observing the literal counting of the vote at the end of the evening. And that's how it should be on all elections. It's the way it used to be before the machines were around, and that's the way it needs to go back. And there's got to be certification by numerous people that are involved in this process, and the committee man being one of them, to certify the fact that I saw, and this is the true, accurate votes that were calculated on whatever the date may be for the election of whoever it was, so on and so forth. But you see, if people are not willing to do that job, you don't get paid for it. But it's not a big deal. You know, it's giving up 1 day a month. If people are not willing to do that, then we don't deserve liberty. We don't deserve a republic. And our children will become slaves, just like we are, and we're about to lose everything unless we take it back. And I do think we're going to take it back. But anyway,
I'm with you on everything you've said, except for the focus, and that was the focus of our founders. And, you know, we're not trying to compete with them on the committeeman level. We are holding everyone to their oath, which swore that no human laws should be suffered to contradict creation or the Bible. And that gets a whole bunch of people interested, because the Christians are sitting on the sidelines doing nothing. But when they find out that protecting creation and protecting the Bible is the focus of our mission, they get excited. And I think that's the victory that our founders had, and the victory we can have now, because we can do nothing without the Lord. That's it.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, but again, you have to be free and independent. You can't be statutorized. You can't be operating under statutes.
We're not operating on statutes. Hold on.
You're operating. Maybe you broke away from it, but you basically all these committee men are operating under the rules, okay? And there is a court process. There is a process, due process for this process, for the political process, in order to deal with the committee men. Now, if you run for instance, if you want to become a committee man in your election district, okay, there's only one committee man, one seat, okay? And in that one seat, if two or three people are running for that same seat, you're doing kind of a primary for that. But the primary decision of that primary ultimately is the county chair. Okay. Now, it may not be that with yours, but this is how it is in New York and many other states, at least on the East Coast. And maybe other states run a little differently. But the bottom line is this. You have to be free and independent. It has nothing to do with the court. If 10 people want to run and participate in that election district, then 10 people participate together and collectively in that election district. And the more the merrier, because the more the many hands make light work. There is no limit. Let me put it this way again. In my county, here in Dutchess County, and maybe you can confirm it's the same way in your county, there are 249 seats. There are 249 seats. One seat, one person for each election district for the Republican Party. Same thing in the Democrat Party. But that's what it is. There is no 250, there's no 300. That's it. 249 for the county. And they are controlled by party bosses, four individuals that run that county. And the county chair and the co-chair, they're like God in the political process. Now, with that said, in the Committee of Safety, no one gets elected, no one gets appointed, people volunteer, and we can have 500 people, we can have 1,000 people in our county committee. The more, the merrier. They want limited because there has to be a certain amount of control, and they really don't need any more than one for each election district. Each election district is approximately, I think it maximizes, at least here in New York, around 400 seats. So 400 particular, not 400 seats, but 400 families within a particular district. Okay, so each district is broken up 400, it could be 300, 200, whatever the case may be, but I think it caps off somewhere around 400 families that are 400 registered Republicans within a particular area, and they create these election districts. So again, we need free and independent. We don't need party bosses. We don't want any elected, I got to be elected or appointed by a party boss. I don't want any of that because that's not free and independent.
Right.
Our founding fathers ran it this way. Now, as far as the Bible is concerned, look, I absolutely agree with you on that. We are a Christian nation. Anyone that denies that just doesn't know history. And we've got a lot of information on our website. We've done memorandums on this. We've done videos on this. We've laid out. Look at the seal. The U.S. seal was given, the job was given to Franklin, Jefferson, and Adams, I think. Was it Adams?
Yep.
It was given to them. Now, Adams kind of sort of backed out a little bit, I guess, because he didn't produce anything, but Franklin and Jefferson did. And they produced, one of them produced the seal as Moses holding up the rod and separating the sea.
Right.
For Israel to cross over and then taken out the Egyptians. The other one came up with, well, the cloud of fire or something that was between Egypt, the Egyptians, and the Israelis to prevent them from overtaking the Israelis to kill them off because they were coming to slaughter them. And that those were the seals that were proposed. And what did we end up with? We ended up with something totally different.
Okay, but that doesn't mean, still, our law as written is every one of these people swore an oath to protect and defend the Constitution. Right. And the basis of that is the laws of God, and there's nothing more freeing than that. So your precinct bosses or committeemen, you know, your county bosses, you know, they have to follow the law as written and the law that we were given.
They follow.
Well, no, we have to hold them to their.
Look, you're talking about the ideal position. You're right in your position and your thinking. I'm not arguing that you're wrong. You're right. But that's not the way reality is, not the way the world works. It's not the way the political process has ended up being. These people are all paid off. What I found out, it didn't take me long to figure this out, to see this, but what I found out, that the people that became the power within those committees, within those committeemen processes in each county, the county bosses, each one of them, they were people that were business people, and they were holding state and county contracts, okay? There was payola going on. There was all kinds of things and benefits. And in return, they did the will of the people above them, and they protected their position, and they controlled the people, and they controlled the vote. There's a lot of chicanery going on, a lot of votes being counted in secret, and just people being put into power of being walked, as far as walking the paperwork. They'd get the people in that the other people wanted. Everything is under control. Now, look, it doesn't mean that your county's offering great stuff. I understand, but there are 3,000 counties in the United States, and we got to turn every one of them to liberate them. And only the people can liberate themselves by getting rid of party bosses and doing taking care of the business themselves. That's what we are doing.
It's not us that gets rid of the party bosses. It's the Lord and our reliance on Him and the oath that we swore to Him to protect His laws and His creation. And I'm sorry you don't have more faith in what He can do if we lay it all on the line for Him like our founders did.
Well, look, I'm agreeing with you. I don't think you're realizing what I'm saying. All I'm saying is we need to break away from the party bosses. We need to break away from that system and be free and independent. And we'll never be free and independent as long as there's someone in control of us. We have to be in control of ourselves. And we have
to... The Lord's in control of me, and He's showing me great progress and giving me opportunities like I never imagined.
My point is that you're only one county. That's my point. I understand what you said. I told you, we have a county that's north of us here in of Dutchess County, just north of us, one or two counties up. And that county operated totally different than any other county in the state that we're aware of because of the guy that got the seat in as the county chair in that county. But they were still isolated because they couldn't work very well with other people, so they were kind of independent on their own, doing what they could, and I understand that. But you're not going to get 3,134 people who take a seat in all those particular counties and do what you're doing. But look, we are built upon the Declaration of Independence, which puts us under the laws of nature and of nature's God. And we do that the first order of business and the first thing signed by President Washington was the fact that the Bible should be the centerpiece of our education and should be encouraged. They didn't make it a law, it had to be, because they couldn't do that, but it was encouraged. And it was and when you take a state like New York that encouragement was under, and we had the Bible in school here in New York, and I'm sure we had the Bible in school across America in pretty much everywhere. Okay, at least in the public schools, that is. And then, of course, you got the Christian schools and the private schools and so on. But again, they're free and independent to do what they want. If they wanted to run as a Jewish a thing or a Muslim, that's their prerogative. They can do whatever they want. But we are a Christian nation. We're to teach our children morals, and it's up to the schools to teach those morals. It's more up to the people, the parents. But nevertheless, we expect that our schools are going to be have an education built on morals, no matter what they're teaching.
So seven signers of the Constitution placed Bibles in schools to the equivalent of one Bible for every population of 250. People are understanding that message and that our laws are based on the first sentence of the Declaration, the first sentence of our laws, the only two laws we had when we fought against the British, and the Lord made it happen. And just for the problems, I realize all the duress you're under and your history of such tyranny, but this God can give us a new day like He gave our founders a new day. And if we just put all of our reliance on Him, our focus on Him, and our platform is just amazing. It's all about the Bible. There's like 270-some, you know, platform items, and 79 of them relate to Bible verses. Some of them relate to like four or five Bible verses. And I swear that the Lord will make it happen. And I'm feeling so buoyant. I'm just, you know, I'm in euphoria. So I just pray that, you know, the Lord will let you see that if we work for Him.
Hold on a minute. Let me just say something. You seem to be talking as if I don't agree with that. You seem to be talking as if I don't teach that. You seem to be talking if I don't believe that. That's not true at all. Maybe you haven't been paying close enough attention. We start off with a Bible reading, and the purpose of starting off our group with a Bible reading, and we We just formed the Committee of Safety in my county, and we start off with the reading of the Bible. Now, we may say a little prayer before or after, but the Bible reading is the most important thing, because faith comes from hearing and hearing from the Word of God. And I do agree with you. You know, we read in 2 Chronicles 7:14 that if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heavens and will forgive their sins and will heal their land. I believe that. I hold that up as my thinking when I do any of these things. And a lot of people, I'm seeing a big movement in this nation, for good or for bad, in the sense of whether they have a true gospel or not, because, you know, we're in the time of the great falling away. But nevertheless, okay, the people, and many of them are in prison, meaning spiritual prison, in the sense that they may be under the hearing of a false situation, whatever the case may be in their churches. I don't know what's going on there. You know, all these churches that are denominational, you know, you got the Baptists and you got the Presbyterians, you got the Episcopalians, you got the Catholics, and it goes on and on and on and on and on. And they have been beside themselves because they come up with the doctrines of men. And, you know, when Paul, what was it? I think it was Paul. It was Paul who spoke about this and said that he thanks God that he didn't baptize any of you. But you say, I'm of Paul, or I'm of Cephas, or I'm of this one or that one. You know, I'm of Christ. That's who I am. And that's who we have to lift up. But that has been a battle in the churches for 2,000 years. And it is what it is, but it has gotten pretty bad lately. But nevertheless, I see a movement in this nation. People are turning to God. Now, what's going on in their hearts, that's between them and God. But nevertheless, they're recognizing the fact. And the whole nation doesn't have to repent. The whole nation doesn't have to humble themselves. It's the children of God that have fallen away that need to return, that need to realize and to humble themselves and to pray and ask. And for that, then God blesses the whole nation. So, but I agree with that. You know, yeah. You talk as if...
Let's just make that our focus, and I will sign off because I really like what you're saying.
No, I agree. But that has got to be our focus. So, all right, we do have another caller, and we're coming close to the end anyway, so let me take the last caller. Appreciate it, Bob. Thanks. Okay, Ross, you got the mic. Go right ahead. How you doing? Ross, you got the mic. Ross, did you fall asleep on us? Well, if you're talking, your mic's muted because we're not hearing you. But I guess Ross may be away from the computer, so he's not hearing me. But we don't seem to have anybody else. We only got about 4 minutes left. Let me just read something here. Republic versus the Democracy. This is James Madison, Federalist number 10, okay? And we read in Federalist number 10, democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. And of course, that's one of the major problems. People think we're a democracy, and with that democracy comes political parties, and with political parties become destruction of this nation. Washington was absolutely clear in his position that parties would destroy this country. Jefferson believed that the courts would destroy this country. He was absolutely convinced that that is what's going to destroy this nation. And you know what? They were both right, because parties and the courts have both, betrayed us. We have a problem. He spoke particularly, of course, about the judges in the courts, that they would destroy it. And, of course, that's the bar attorneys. You know, we have the British bar, which initiated this whole thing and came into the colonies in 1750 with the sole purpose of destroying our common law courts. And they've succeeded at this point, pretty much. Okay, but in any event... I forget the year it was that the ABA was founded. It was the late 1800s, okay? But they continued to do exactly to fall under the bar. under the king ultimately, but under the bar, we have the American Bar Association, and they too call their people, they have titles of honor, and they call them esquires, and they are forbidden from holding any office in here in the United States, any office of honor. And that's what the 13th Amendment says, and we have to put that in play. Okay, with that, I guess I have nothing else more to say, and there's nobody else in the queue, so I guess we'll come to an end. We're just 2 minutes early tonight. But with that, Lord willing, we'll see you next week. Good night, everybody.